Good morning. You're listening to Conversations at WDRT Viroqua 91.9, or you can stream at WDRT.org. Today we have a great guest, Francia. We're going to find out about her life and what gives her the fire behind all her work that many of you know. Francia is the founder of Bricolage Circus here in Viroqua, and wow, it's made quite an impact on our community already, and especially our youth. It's beautiful to see her work with the people she works with and the skills they develop. And there's a big story behind that, because Francia has a lot of fire that she operates with in her life, and we'll hear about that and where it's taken her, which was really interesting. We met a few weeks ago, I guess, really, doing handwork together. And of course, handwork gives you lots of time to chit-chat and find out things. So I thought this will be really fun to hear her life. So Francia, welcome.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Yeah, when part of the story that I really appreciated, which I think most people will appreciate, is this train of activities and events and people and countries and teachers that is your life story of getting into circus.
Yes.
And so it started?
Started in San Francisco. Well, It started before that. It always sounds funny to say this part because it sounds a little cliche. Mm-hmm. Started at Burning Man. Because it did. I grew up in San Francisco and also South San Francisco. If you've ever been to the Bay, it's a little on the expensive side. So families, if you start in the city, you start moving to the suburbs. Even the South City's right next to San Francisco, like a 15-minute difference. Mm-hmm. It's still a different. It's a little cheaper, more accessible. The school system is pretty good. So our family, the last 3 years of high school, I was there mm-hmm. in South San Francisco. Anyways, once you graduate from high school, college, you tend to go back to the city.
Yes.
It's any city. You either go to SF, San Francisco, or you go to Oakland, or you move to LA. Like, if you are raised or born in the Bay, I'm not saying everyone, but you tend to stay in California. So being here in Viroqua, Wisconsin, it's quite a journey, but also quite, for me, it's a treat to be in this amazing community.
Yeah.
So from Burning Man, I ended up going to circus school in San Francisco for about 5 years. And I started just like everybody showing up. And like, wow, it was a big space. I had never been there. And I trained with my first instructor. She was Elena Ipanova. I might not be pronouncing her last name correctly. And it just morphed from there. Mm-hmm. I was coming out of the triathlon and marathon season. And I was like, okay, I'm going to try circus. We'll see what happens. And fast forward almost 20 years later.
Right. But so you just slipped in that little comment about just coming out of the triathlon season.
Yes.
Well, that was a big part of your life, too.
Yes, running. I started running actually in sixth grade when I won my first race.
Wow.
And I got scouted. The coach got really excited and pulled me in. I was doing like a 5:30 mile, so that was pretty fast. And that's when it all started. And I credit my running to all of my discipline, because even that is a solo sport, but you still, when you're in cross country or even in track, you still have teammates. So it's very self-driven. Like, if you want to win for yourself and your team, like, you have to do the work. As opposed, I feel like when you have like soccer and all these other team sports, like you still have to train, but you have to train with your teammates. Mm-hmm. I did triathlons, half Ironman, and lots of marathons.
That was all before you found Circus.
Circus.
Yeah, so you had a huge record of, mm-hmm. of discipline mm-hmm. and strength.
Yes.
And endurance.
I wasn't very flexible. I always tell this story to my students because I couldn't touch my toes.
Oh, really?
Well, running really, running really like tightens you. So, and I could touch my toes, but not in the way I can now fold and bend. It was one of those things coming as an athlete, like, oh, I can do anything. And all of a sudden it's like, whoa, I have to really work on this part now. So I took it out on that journey of like becoming flexible and strong too.
Wow.
Yeah.
And did that all happen within the context of the circus school?
It did. Mm-hmm. It did.
What was a day like? A training day?
A training day. So for the circus, so I was coming out of running. I was still running in the morning. I would get up at 5, go for my morning run, go to work. I work for this biotech company. I went to school for biology, and I was doing biotech. We were doing cancer research. Mm-hmm. Then I would go to work. I worked in Palo Alto near the Stanford campus, so get there around 7 in the morning for my lunch break. I would probably sneak a bike ride or a lunch or like a run again. Get out of work, go to circus school, and train from like 5 to 9.
Wow.
Or 8:39. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I sustained that for 2 years, and then I realized I was going to have to shift something. So the running competition went away, and I still run, but I wasn't competing. Mm-hmm. So the circus stayed, and I was there on the weekends. So for like almost 3 years, I was just every weekend, I mean, besides the weekdays that I was training from Friday to Sunday, I would be training in the circus space. Mm-hmm. At some point, they tell you to leave, go eat. But I just really wanted it.
The culture must have really supported that.
Well,
their teacher sounds like, I mean, that's a Russian name.
Yeah, she's Miss Elena Panova. She's like a sought-out after teacher. People from all over the world go and train with her. And at the time, Master Louis was there. He was the handstand master. He's just recently passed away. He'll be greatly missed. Mm-hmm. So the school just had a lot of students from all over the place. It was a little competitive, which I was used to because coming from running and racing. But yeah, the teachers are pretty amazing. And I think it was a little bit old school. Like if you put in the work, the teachers wanted to give you more. But if you were just there to have fun, that was also allowed. Because there was a lot of there's a lot of recreational classes at the San Francisco Circus Center too. So if you were just there to have fun, that's available. And if you want to be I don't know if they still have these programs, but at the moment they had a pre-professional program. So if you wanted to go that route, that was available too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. San Francisco, it's mm-hmm. If you're from the Midwest, has never been there. My current husband lover, I don't like calling him husband, he's my eternal lover. He tells me that San Francisco or California always sounds like the land of make-believe.
Yeah, until you live there
for a
long enough time to see that
it's real.
Yeah, it's real.
Yeah.
It's a little tough to figure it out with the money and everything. But but there's so many opportunities.
Oh, yes.
I mean, at first, I lived there, and I didn't know about the San Francisco Circus School, But we knew about the Pickle Family Circus and other opportunities that were in the area.
Yeah, the Pickle Family Circus is the founder, was like that building was their home base.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was never, I think by the time I got there, that circus wasn't performing anymore.
It could be.
Yeah, so you had like Teatro Sansani, or if like Cirque du Soleil came into town, we got tickets. So it was just different, like different associations.
Yeah,
a lot of, when I was there, we had a lot of international teachers. So I don't know, I feel like I came into circus at the San Francisco Circus Center in an era of abundance.
Right.
I don't know anymore, haven't been there in a while, but I came into an era of amazing instructors, amazing abundance. I feel like I was very lucky in that way.
And I probably, well, we did. We moved away before that because the Pickle Family Circus was still a big deal.
Yeah.
It performed all over the area. I remember the Cirque du Soleil show, one of them. Maybe they've been back more.
Oh, yes. Now they have so many.
But anyway, it's a wonderful place where things can blossom and grow.
And get, yeah, the Bay has just this energy of go, go, go. But I am also just so excited. I feel what I've learned in this little journey I'm on is that if you grew up in the city, you need to leave. Because it's so easy to be there, so accessible. And moving away from that really lets you, if you learn what the Bay Area or Burning Man is about, all the principles, and you, I actually feel I'm applying it outside.
Well, that's what it was meant to be.
That's what it was meant to be. So this radical inclusion, reliance, bringing art and creativity outside of what is set up for. So I'm doing my best.
Yeah, you are.
Every day is different. Some days easier than others, like everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it is, you're right about that. I moved there when I was 23. It was all new, and I was just dropped into this incredible multicultural workplace. I mean, really, it was amazing. Chinese, Hispanic, Philippine, Swedish, Japanese, just, but in my workplace of like 15 or 20 people, it was just amazing. So I had to learn fast, and you had to be a team.
Yes.
You didn't know each other's languages mostly at all.
That is.
So it was just what we worked with kind of centered us, that we knew that part of it. But it was really fun. It was great. What a way to learn.
What a way to learn.
Yeah,
and really at the end, you realize sometimes you don't need that many words to communicate.
Right. But you do need food.
Oh, yes.
Oh, we shared food. Taught each other about ourselves through that. There were a lot of things. Yeah. But anyway, that vitality, that bubbling up of so many cultures, so many languages, so many art forms, really stimulating. And and you can it is nice to get away and look back at it and feel the gifts, really sense the gifts that you got from it all. Yeah. So what about thinking from Burning Man, or maybe it was from San Francisco, then you went north?
I lived in Oregon.
Yeah, what happened there? What was going on there?
So I moved to Oregon, and I always tell people that, if you grew up in the Bay, when I was little, I wasn't born in San Francisco, I was born in Nicaragua, but I showed up in SF with my family. My family was there before me, and I showed up, and the great city, the Golden Gate. So, you start growing up, navigating. So you think the whole world is like that when you're a 7 year old. And
right.
I come from Nicaragua and I lived in a city too. So even then it was like, it's a more poor country, it was still a lot of bustling. So I'm now in another bustling city. Mm-hmm. It was great. And you're just not thinking like, oh, the rest of the U.S. is not like
right.
San Francisco.
Right.
No you're perspective. Not. Yeah. So I ended up moving to Oregon, and culture shock. I was living in Eugene, Oregon. I've tried to start a school. Like, I went to various gyms. I went to various places, tried to rent places, and everything was like, no, no, we don't know what you're doing. What is this aerial art? And I always joke, like, you know, you hang upside down. And you teach kids how to do it, huh? So finally, after a year, I ended up meeting my mentor, who I give her a lot of credit because she definitely took me under her wings, Naja Rossoff, and she owns Bounce Gymnastics. And once I started the program there with her, she even changed her business name to Bounce Gymnastics Aerial Art Center.
Wow.
I know. And I met her. She was moving out of her old space. She's like, come back in 2 weeks. I'm like, is this going to be for real? Because Eugene, Oregon has a very different vibe. It's very slow.
I was going to say it's so kinda slow for you.
Oh, my God. I was kind of dying. I was like, what?
Too laid back.
It was like, and people are, if they're not like, I'll be there at 10, and they show up by 11, and that does not flow with me. Mm-hmm. Because that's just disrespectful to my time, or I wouldn't do that to someone. It's disrespectful to their time. So I met Naja, who's like a firecracker. She's like, 2 weeks, we're going to start. And I show up there, and we did. And so I started the school, I started the program, and I was there for 6 years.
Wow,
yeah.
That's a good run, huh?
Really good run. And it was, so I have this thing where I do 5-year projects.
Okay.
Every 5 years, I start a new project. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be consistent. It could go a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. So with Naja, we started the program, shows. She was always like, Freza, you should do a show. Hey, Freza, you think you want to do that? And so she would never, like, push me. She would just put the idea out there, and yeah, it's still going. And
fantastic.
So I trained the teachers there as well. So it's interesting now moving to Viroqua. Like, we have another. I have like this other little thing I made.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a little station break here. I want to let our folks know that you're listening to Conversations. Mary Christensen, I'm the host today. We're on 91.9, or you can stream at wdrt.org, and also listen to this in the archives, or send the link to somebody that you think would want to listen to it. And so my guest today is Francia, who is the founder of Bricolage Circus here in Viroqua, and she's been here, you said, 7 years, and it's amazing what you've been able to build up in that time. So now maybe we'll talk a little bit about, so you came from Oregon, having started something kind of similar, but working with another woman who's doing gymnastics.
Yeah, she had a gymnastics center at the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then coming to Viroqua was a huge shift. And yet, you know, fit in by building it up again here. So you want to tell us a little bit about, you know, even how you felt in coming here.
Yeah.
Like whether you, yeah.
So I had visited Viroqua in the summer or spring before with Reed, my husband. And I thought it was sweet. It was cute. That's it.
I remember meeting you on the hallway of the Landmark Center.
Really?
Yeah, on the second floor. I suppose you were on your way up to the high school or someplace,
yeah.
But Reed, maybe Sean, you, anyway, you were new, into town, and I was in the hallway, and they introduced me, introduced us.
I don't remember, but I was probably like, whoa.
Yeah.
So we moved my stuff a couple of years later from my visit, and we had two dogs at the time, and we were renting the Banner's place at the time. And it was really cold and snowing, and we were arriving, and Rito's like, we have to make a fence. And I was like, all right, I'm in Wisconsin. So it was the middle of the night. We had to make a fence in the backyard. We were pounding on frozen ground.
Oh, no.
And it was snowing. It was like minus 10. And I'm like, I'm doing this. I'm in Wisconsin now. And it was like a really cold winter that year. And I was like, okay. And the reason I moved to Wisconsin in the winter specifically is because if you can really be in the harshest environment that the community's in and work through it, you're going to be okay. Because moving to Wisconsin in the spring or summer, that's just like peaches.
Yeah.
That's so easy.
It's interesting you have these principles like that. No, really, it is. Anyway, it's great. I love hearing that.
Yeah, I think you can test yourself. I mean, I wasn't in any harm, right? It's just the weather that I'm going to be choosing to live in if I'm going to do it. So, that's like a big deal, how you adapt to your climate.
It sure is, yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'm doing it. I'm staying.
Great. It was invigorating, probably.
I don't know. Now it's invigorating. At the moment, I was like, what am I doing here? Building a fence in the middle of winter, and it's snowing, and it's minus. I don't know. It was just such a funny moment, and like I never thought I would remember it, right? When you're going through this, you don't you're not, oh, I'm gonna put this in my archive for later. No, but it always comes up, my introduction to Viroqua in Wisconsin.
But you're right about that spring and summer, because our introduction was May. Everything was in bloom. It was like heaven.
See?
It was like, we're coming here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and there's just a little bit side note, because you're talking, and the smell of my introduction to Viroqua is even funnier, because the truck at that time was running in biodiesel, and because it was so cold, it was starting to freeze, so you could smell the french fries inside the cabin.
Okay.
There you go. That's as I'm coming into it from the West Beach side. So I'm in Viroqua. It's winter. Obviously, there's nowhere to go train. I had contacted the Madison Circus Base if I could go train there. I met some people. I went a couple of times, but realistically, driving 2 hours to just train, it wasn't going to be in it. And the ARC was mentioned, and Chris Cox was mentioned as the rigging lighting person. And then it was up to me to, like, go investigate. Like, is this really going to be it? And I went to the ARC, and they were like, really? Okay. But thankfully, I think Chris Cox and there was this Frank was there and this other lady. They're like, whatever. This is what the building was made for, to be like an artist collective. And I couldn't have done it without the support of the ARC. Now it's known as the Common.
Right.
Yeah, the ARC really, like, if we're going to take in my opinion, artist collaboration, it was literally because there was not a lot going on there at the time.
True.
And all of a sudden, my classes, like all the Pleasant Little Rich kids would come to class. And I remember Frank saying, like, how cool it looked, like you had this swarm of kids crossing the street to go to circus. And And it just invigorated the building.
Sure.
I remember within a month, the building looked different. It's like, it went from being quiet to like, there was just, it just started booming. Other people moved in. And I'm not saying it's because of my program, but it's just somehow we all magnetically called each other.
Right.
Yeah.
The life going on in there was intriguing.
Yeah.
Well, I think at that time, probably the only close aerial training was in Mazzomani.
Yes.
Right, because I know a couple of young people who went there.
Yes.
That was my introduction to
it. What was her name?
I don't know.
Yeah, I know. They come here. Now we collaborate during the summer.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I know one of the students at Pleasant Ridge wanted to do silks for her 8th grade project, and we all was, what? What is that? And can we really do that? Can we...
So
how can we rig something so she can do it?
So actually, I ended up working with her because I was here visiting.
Okay.
And Rito explained to get the clamp and like how to go about the gear. And I just happened to be here that one, I think it was during Christmas or something. Pleasant Ridge also had like an alumni invitation or something.
Right.
Yeah. And I ended up working with, what was her name? I say like Elsa, or but I'm thinking of Frozen.
No, it was Sarah Kamen's daughter, but I'm not thinking.
Yeah,
of
I don't
right
remember. Yeah, so this is way before I was even like the idea of moving here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I just thought that was so great.
Probably planted the seed. I mean, a lot of people saw that show.
Yes,
and we were all amazed that this was a. This is an art. This is a new art.
Yeah.
We hadn't known about it.
The arc. I just want to say, nurture a lot of artistic endeavors. So I'm always grateful for that space.
Right. How long were you there before the library, the old library building?
About 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah. We ended up adding more points. We extended the stage. The ARC ended up getting grants to fix the space because there were so many things going on.
Mm-hmm.
I would say 2.5 years.
Okay.
3. And then... We saw the former library building come into availability, and at first it was just a thought. It was not like, because I was looking into the food enterprise to rent space for there because I needed to expand at the moment the ARC just the classes were getting a lot bigger and I wasn't able to support it because the space is quite small. So I was looking into another space, and then the library popped up.
Right down the street.
Down around the street. And personally, I didn't see the vision because the building is not my forte, and I have the design. But I don't know like how are we gonna do it. And Reed went inside, and he's like, "We can do this. We can take off floors, we can do this, like all the engineering." And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, it was such a leap of faith, I thought. But really, it's turned out into a great space.
It's a beautiful building. It has a lot of history. It's a former Andrew Carnegie Library. So it is a historic building as well.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And you have some... offices
built in. There's spaces downstairs and there's spaces upstairs. So it's not just for aerial art. So we have people renting offices. So there's a dance yoga studio on the top that other artists also use. So there's a lot of dancing going on at the moment. And that's really fun to see adults coming in to do their salsa or rueda dance. Yeah, there's a lot of activity in that regard. So it's really nice. And we hope we get more.
Mm-hmm.
I just haven't really been advertising.
No, I didn't know what was going on there.
See?
Yeah. But that's the way a lot of things go here. Word of mouth.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I feel like letting things also develop mm-hmm. by itself can sometimes be a little more rewarding in a way, so you people don't feel like bombarded with information because mm-hmm. there's so much information out there.
Right.
Yeah.
Plus it's the relationships that then evolve and bubble up whatever creativity wants to happen.
Well,
to happen.
And I'm just right now that because I have two little ones, I'm so grateful they come with to work with me sometimes, and they'll be taking classes and I'll be downstairs teaching, and it's really amazing to have this building that I can support a bit of space for my children and other classes to be going on and another class to be going on downstairs. So sometimes I'm just like, wow, that looks really cool.
That sounds great. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
It is really nice to work in the same building with your children.
Yeah. So, and there's people upstairs doing their jobs. So sometimes there's like a lot of people in the space, but you can't see it or feel it.
No.
It's very quiet.
Yeah, it is.
It's very quiet. So.
So right now, what is your schedule like? I mean, like class-wise.
Yeah, yes. So most of the classes are in the afternoon after school. This gives me a chance to be with my little ones. At the moment, we're homeschooling. And then on Friday mornings and Saturday mornings, it's for the little ones. They get to come. If you're like 1.5 to 6, you get to come and do open gym. So I set up obstacle courses. The climbing wall is there. And there's literally children on the wall.
Wow.
Hanging.
Sounds exciting, actually. I didn't know that you were doing all that there.
And there's children on the on the floor jumping around. And then when the silks come down, there's children hanging. And, yeah, sometimes I forget because I'm in it too, right? So I have to step back to like, see how cool all these kids just being free with their bodies or tumbling or whatever they want. And the parents stay because it's for parents too. So parents are there with their children as well.
Wow, that sounds great. Really great. And it is so nice for them, the children, to have that much movement mm-hmm. in a safe space. Really great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're moving, Mary.
Right,
you're moving.
I'm thinking it's learning the space between each other is really important.
Yes.
In developing our perception as a human. So, I mean, that's where they can do that.
Yes. And knock on wood, we haven't had any. It's interesting you're mentioning that because there hasn't been a collision. Mm-hmm. And yeah, for such a one of kids, I mean, there's like little conflicts, which is great because we need a little conflict of somebody who wants this or that, and then they like end up negotiating, which that's what we all have to learn. But there hasn't been any sort of like collision of injury, and mm-hmm. we're in a space where there's a lot going on. So I didn't think about that actually, like. For the older ones, for my older youth, it's easy because they're at this point 11 to 18, so they're more developed than that are. But like little ones, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what I like about that little program I got going on right now is that there's a mix of 1.5 to 6, so the elder kids are aware of the more little ones, of mm-hmm. the baby ones.
Mm-hmm. And they can develop a sense of responsibility and teaching. And it's sweet.
It is sweet
to work with really young kids, so they get that too.
Exactly.
It's so sweet watching them grow up.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you have classes after school.
Mm-hmm.
And is that, do all of, like last spring, I think, or was it in the fall when there was a show that had everyone, age group?
I've been developing shows for quite a while. I myself, I don't really enjoy, it's not that I'm against it, it just doesn't nourish me, the performing part, like me, myself on stage, but I love creating shows and I love, the students that would love performing, providing a space for them to do it. And so once, I used to do it twice a year, but I realized there's a lot that goes into putting a show, also working with all these families. So now we just do it once a year.
Okay.
And this year, for the spring, we'll have the intermediate performing group. We'll have a showcase, but not the rest of the class. And then in the fall, if the students are invited or choose to perform, we'll have all of the classes together. Yeah, so this gives also a time for students it gives them a time if they want to continue with circus. I'm always giving our students, like, we go in sessions. This way, you start a session. If you don't want to do it, it's great. If you do, you continue. And with performance, it gives the students a chance to also gain more skills, polish what we have. So there's classes Monday through Saturday right now, and there's aerial hoop, trapeze, straps, and silks, and then there's dancing and tumbling.
It's great.
And then open gym. Yeah, yeah, and adult rock climbing is going to hopefully start soon, too.
Okay.
Just for, like, adults to come mm-hmm. and have a space for themselves. So it's a very prolific spring session, this one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Something to look forward to, for sure.
Yeah. And it changes every season, it changes. Mm-hmm.
So when you were at the Arc, you said Chris was doing your rigging,
mm-hmm.
and now it's Reed, right?
Yes. But all the rigging of the space got done by an engineer.
Oh.
Yes. Because now we're working with a bigger load, and now we're working, it's a public building, like,
mm-hmm. like, it's all the safety factors.
There's more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Structural.
Everything.
Beefing it up.
Yes.
And
now the Arc, it was the same, but it was, because it was so small.
Right.
I only had like 5 students in each class, versus now there's like 10 to 11 students, so everything got engineered by a local engineer that's in Westby.
Hmm.
Yeah, and then the rigging part, yeah, Reed and I rig together. But mostly, you never rig alone, so you always have to have
right.
a person there. But yeah, he does most of it. We have this thing called a genie. And like, because the height of the space is 32 feet high, so the ladder, I was just like, we need something different. Going up in a ladder every time you need to change equipment, it could be a little dangerous, but it's also, I find it a little scary.
Yeah, okay.
Climbing is different than being on a ladder. I don't know why.
Okay.
Give me anything to climb, but I don't know, ladders, there's something about.
Okay.
Just lush, they yeah. can shift.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I don't know.
So what's a genie?
A genie is one of these machines that okay. brings you up.
Lifts.
Or
okay.
Yeah, and then it brings you back down. So okay. you see them a lot in construction.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about that when they put roofing materials
yes.
on.
Yes. Like yeah. a crane.
Yeah. yeah.
But you're in a little box.
Yeah. Okay. So what's the, it seems like the show you mentioned also working with families. So you're working with the students, but then the families.
Yes.
So do they play a big role or how do they work?
Yes. I for sure none of this would be able to be done without their full commitment to the show, to the program. So every time we have a show, the first thing I tell them is thank you, because they have so much like love and enthusiasm and like good vibes. I mean, that it makes the rest of the process super fun and easy. And That's why shows are optional. You're not. You don't have to do them if you don't want to.
For all the students who've been in the sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're taking a little station break here to introduce our guest. I'm Mary Christensen, hosting the Conversations program this morning. And Francia is our guest, and she is the founder of the Bricolage Circus here in Viroqua. You're listening to us on 91.9 FM, and you can stream the program at WDRT.org. It will be in the archives. And so, Francia, we were talking about the role of the parents as, you know, supporting the activity of the circus with their children, and the enthusiasm that they bring really has an element to, plays an element in the success.
Yes, because if the parents, as you know, they probably have a lot of other things going on, and adding on one more thing. So since the start, I've always been very conscious of them. And so far, every time we've had a show, everything gets announced ahead of time. So they get to decide if their family is available. And whenever I send invitations, I always say, this is a family decision. Check your family schedule. Because once we're in the show mode, it's so demanding. So, and you can always drop, but most... Once you're in it, you're most likely going to stay. So for the success of the performer, there's a lot of, like, they need to be there early. There's no late. Mm-hmm. there's a lot of prep. And there's a lot of things I also provide while we're in show mode to facilitate all of that. So far, the parents, they're also performing, like, they're just the backstage, which is really the most important part, making the performer shine. So so far it's been great. Mm-hmm. And I'm always just thankful to all of the families that want to be part of this as well.
Yeah, I've noticed they do the front desk a lot, and I suppose they're in the back helping with the dress.
What if they ask, they want to help? It's usually like after, like, putting things away.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. There's like a team of parents who do like hair and makeup.
Okay.
Makeup is very minimal, but there's a lot of braiding. They had to, this last show, there was 26 performers and there was 26 heads to braid.
Oh, wow.
You should have seen all the... There was like five moms braiding hair, and I was like, oh, my God. I'm glad that's not my job.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a very skilled braider at the moment. Uh-huh. I'm learning.
Okay. But they were beautiful.
Oh.
Really beautiful.
Oh. So, so parents will step in if they want to. Again, there's always options, because we'll figure it out. But if they want to and they feel they have the time, mm-hmm. so not to stress them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it is performing is the schedule beforehand. I mean, it's like if a child is in youth symphony or...
Yes.
A lot of... You have to get them there on time. You have to be...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
ready. And this last one was so easy. Everything got sent down in August. The performance was in December.
Oh. Yeah.
Every month I would send a remind as to where we were.
Mm-hmm.
So in case you forgot, here's, you know, there were so many schedule reminders that I feel like if they forgot, because they have, you know, other kids, work, there is always at least 2 weeks ahead that it would prep them for that.
Mm-hmm. So this really shines on your capacity as a teacher. Right, it does. You know, schedule.
Yes.
And to communicate and, you know, at another level.
Yes. And now that, I hadn't thought about it that way, but I think because when I'm teaching aerial arts, and this is just like how I'm feeling, you know, I think there's a lot of aerial arts for adults, And there's a small niche for youth. And when you are working with youth, especially upside down or in a form that is not like a normal, you want to make sure your directions are clear and you want to make sure that there's that guidance so there's little to no confusion. And of course, we all start on the floor, then we head to the air. But yeah, there's also like when you come into my studio, I make a class plan so the student can see what we're working on. And sometimes it's the same for weeks because we're not ready for the next page. So there is that, then they know what they are working on. And not everybody does, but I do encourage my students to keep a notebook. So they write down the class plan in this way. Next time you're like, oh, I learned this. So I've noticed the students that tend to progress and whatever, if they want to go faster or whatever, progress, like writing, having that notebook, they'll come back to me and be like, this skill, I still don't know it. I want to revisit. Or,
wow, that's great.
Yeah, or I didn't do that because it's not in my book. I'm like, hey, that's great because I'm human too. So I don't know. I always feel very safe. I think for me to be an artist, chaos is great, but I think having parameters also nourishes my own creativity. And in a way, it's kind of like little the rhythm. The rhythm with little ones, like they have a lot of free play. Like my kids have a lot of free play, but there is a rhythm, and I think that rhythm makes you feel more safe.
Yeah, the boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in an era where there's so much information, trying to be specific with what I'm heading toward so my students can understand that, and then they can decide to, then they have more choices. Like, I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. I want to stay in here. I'm like, okay, great. Now we know. But if there's not that like communication or class schedule, it feels...
Seems like you talked about another kind of communication too about we're not there yet.
Yes.
That the language doesn't close them off.
No.
Or shut the door, but always encourages more expansion.
I break a lot of circus, and I will always stand by this. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to make these statements sometimes.
Okay.
But I will stand by this. We don't use can't. There's no such a thing as can't. I'm working on it. Mm-hmm. Or I'm not there yet. And whatever that means to the student or to myself, you know, like I said, every day is different. So you just put your best, which however you wake up, feel, but you know you did your best. And sometimes your best is just showing up to class. And so, I can't. We all say, you're working on it. And I think it's really cool to see the peers saying that to each other.
Right.
Like, I'm like, yes.
Right. Yeah, that's great.
Or, no, you're not there yet. You're working. So it's always, there's open, like you said, there's this open-ended that you, whatever you're putting into, eventually you'll mm-hmm. get to wherever you want to get to it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And they can truly feel themselves as an individual.
Yes.
But within the context of this supportive community.
Yes.
Which is so beautiful.
Yes.
That's what the human needs.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't do competitions. Like, I mean, we do games, but because I've always told my students, like, how can you compare? And I know we all compare each other, but so I don't put that stress, because how can you compare? We're all different heights.
Right.
We're all different people. We all have different parents. I mean.
Plus, sometimes the comparison can lead to appreciation.
Yes.
It doesn't have to lead to feeling bad.
Yes.
It can say, wow, that person really knows it.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to affect me.
Exactly.
It's great. It's them. So there's a lot of camaraderie. They're literally holding each other.
Right.
So that's not a figurative speech. And circus when you're working with each other, you are holding, you're feeling each other's spaces, you're with each other, you're on each other. So there's no time to there. If you're gonna show up, you have to be there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
beautiful,
amazing to watch. It really is. I've always said that. I've been asked, don't you get bored of teaching the same thing? I'm like, to be honest, it's never the same because it's a different person.
Yeah.
And they do it different.
Right. And you yourself are different.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, having two children and trying to meet their needs and understand even thinking through, it's another topic we talked about, is how to educate. There's so many options.
Yes.
And you've had many options in your life. So
yes.
You're going through a process, and I think all parents do, of especially when there are options and choices to say, which one is best for this child?
Oh, my God. That's right? Exactly. Yes. And then when you're teaching either a home or the homeschool parents, or you're a teacher at a school, for a school or Waldorf or public, you're always facing that question, or circus, you're always facing that question, because what works for one doesn't necessarily work for the other.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a really interesting lesson that I learned, and because when I first started, I was coming out of this like, I just went to circus school, I'm so cool, and my mentor now just like, Francia, that's great. But listen, not every child wants to be a circus in Cirque du Soleil. Some want to be here to learn, and they're going to go at their own pace. And my 20-year-old son thinks, really? But right, like perspective. I'm still new, learning how to teach. And so definitely, even in that, my 20-year-old something to him now, I'm a different teacher myself.
Right. And you have different
experiences,
right?
Yeah.
Just having children broadens our sense of what's possible, what's necessary.
Yeah, having children, like your own children, it's a very humbling experience.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's it's a very humbling experience of how to go about teaching. But that also has led me to reading more about different ways and different theories.
Right.
So
the underlying philosophies of who a child is, or how
yes.
development happens, or what the goals even are.
Yes.
I think it's very broad, very refined in some areas.
And at the moment, I'm really, really into anthroposophy. Yeah, I'm very much learning that side of the human experience through learning through those teachings right now.
Right.
Yeah, it's giving me a different view from my own childhood of Catholic school and 3 years of public school.
And the firm taskmaster at circus school.
I love her. I do. Yeah. But you know, that's the thing. I'm that type of person and child. That works for me. That would not work for my sisters. Oh, my brother, who's so sensitive, that would have crushed his spirit. But for me, it works.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I'm learning with my own children. One of them, and she's more sensitive and artsy. My little boy, he just wants to,
go. He wants to go into the world.
And
engineer it all.
On time. So even in your own household, you're like, whoa. Like, you can go about it the same way.
Yeah.
But you don't know that in this process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're coming kind of to the end of our show. So I just want to appreciate the richness that you could bring to us through your life, the richness of that, too. And I'm thinking back to the winter when you were building a fence. And what do you think now about Viroqua?
I love it.
Okay, good.
I would now. Oh, man, I'm going to tear up. I know for a fact that I'm such a more enlightened human being from being here in Viroqua, Wisconsin, because I get to learn the teachings of
anthroposophy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I get to learn the teachings of all these hen workers in town. Mm-hmm. I get to experience learning through the Youth Initiative. Mm-hmm. What a school. Youth Initiative is our local high school. And then Pleasant Ridge with their work. And we even have a forest school.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
So I think I've become more of a open-minded person since I've been in Viroqua. Even though I grew up in the Bay, I feel like Viroqua is...
There's more to the world than the
yes.
Bay, right?
Yes.
And there are other pockets of humanity that
yes.
celebrate culture, multiculture, multi-skills. I don't know what else to say, but many, and just the entrepreneurship that a person can take. Like, you have become an amazing teacher here and have an amazing business. Do you want to tell us where people can find you?
Yeah, so it's Bricolage Circus, Circus with a K at the end. So C-I-R-K-U-S, spelled the Russian style.
Okay, and Bricolage?
Bricolage. Circus.com
mm-hmm.
or Instagram is Bricolage Circus too.
Okay, and Bricolage is Bricolage,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay,
yeah, and Bricolage just means to tinker in French. It's a hardware store where you in France, when you go to the Bricolage store, it's the hardware store.
Interesting,
so you can make anything out of anything.
Wow, that's great. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. Francia, this has been great. Really
well,
fun meeting you this year the way I have and talking with you and sharing for our community to know you better.
Well, thank you for having me. And I'm just grateful to be here learning in this beautiful community that all of us are creating.
Yeah, that's so great that we're all creating. From the ground up, just like WDRT, from the ground up, right? It's just a thing.
Even
that
our radio
we have
station.
Felt, yeah, for. Anyway, thank you again.
Thank you.